Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the heavyweight boxing championship of AD 30. Jesus versus the Pharisees. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? All right. The first two rounds have been rough on the Pharisees. They've taken a beating, but their energy has revived. They're ready for more. They keep coming back. They keep coming back. So round three, Mark chapter 2, verses 18 through 22. As I read, try to figure out, okay, how do I see a fight in here? How do I see a boxing match of some sort? Mark 2, 18 through 22. Now, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. Some people came and asked Jesus, "How is it that John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees are fasting, but yours are not?" Jesus answered, "How can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? They cannot, so long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and on that day they will fast. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. If he does, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, he pours new wine into new wineskins." All right, do you see a fight here? Do you see a conflict, at least? You see some conflict? What is the conflict? It's about fasting, right? Who throws the first punch this time? Who throws the first punch? The Pharisees. They take the first swing. Now, the last round, Jesus got the first two swings in, right? When he called this tax-collecting traitor to be his very own follower. He's a Jewish rabbi, right? And he calls this scum to be his follower. And then he goes the next step and has a party with this traitor and all his traitor buddies. So those are the first two swings against the Pharisees. Those are like two headshots. Left hook caught him in the side of the head. Uppercut to the jaw. These Pharisees are just, they don't know what to do. Well, round three, the Pharisees take the first swing. And this time it's about worship. John's disciples, the disciples of the Pharisees, are fasting. But your followers aren't. What's the deal, Jesus? What's the deal? So what are they really getting at? Asking this question about fasting. I would suggest that their accusation is about their worship. You guys are not taking worship seriously enough. We're more spiritual than you. We fast. Now, we're going to talk about this idea of fasting today. What do you think about fasting? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say fasting? This is abstaining from something, usually food, in order to focus on something spiritual. So this isn't like fasting is some kind of a verb noun thing about running fast or something. This is abstaining from eat to pray. Something along those lines. What quick poll, how many of you have ever practiced fasting? You've put aside food for a period of time to have some kind of focus. Okay, maybe half, maybe 40%. 40% of this congregation have practiced fasting. A lot of people have never done it. A lot of people don't even think about it. And there are some probably who are going to listen in on this later on online. So if you're listening in online, put the chips down. You got to fast through this whole time. Okay, so everybody here doesn't have any food, so we're going to fast for like the next 25, 40 minutes. 25 or 40, got it? All right, a lot of people never done it. Some people do it by accident, right? You miss a meal, like, okay, I missed lunch. That's not really fasting. There needs to be a spiritual purpose to it also. We're not going to get into the physical benefits of this. We're talking about the spiritual side. The Pharisees are about the spiritual. We have this thing, and you don't have it. And that's their attack. So are we, when we look at this idea of fasting, are we missing something? Those of us who don't do it, I don't do it very often. Are we missing something? Is there a spiritual benefit we're missing? Or has Jesus brought in something new and fasting is gone? Like, should we do this? Should we not do it? Are we missing something? Are we not? Those are some questions that we'll work through as we go through this fight with the Pharisees. Personally, I've not done a lot of fasting. I've done it on occasion, but it's not a regular thing for me. So I want us to think about, should it be? Should this be a regular thing? The first time I ever fasted, I was about 14. So my dad had taken me to this Christian seminar, and they talked about fasting as part of it. And we were talking about it. We decided we're going to give it a shot. We're going to do a 24-hour fast. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner, we're going to miss. So from whatever, it might have been Friday night all the way through Saturday to Sunday morning, we're not going to eat anything, just drink water, maybe juice. And so we did this. I'd never done it before. I was kind of terrified, like, I'm probably going to die. I'm not going to survive this. And really, I'm 14. I don't remember much about it. I think I remember being hungrier earlier in the day, and then later it kind of went away. But what I remember, what I really remember, is the bagel I had the next morning. Oh, buddy, there has never been a better bagel in all the world. If you practice fasting, that's one of the side benefits of fasting. Food never tastes so good. And pretty much every time I fast, when I get to go back to that food again, I'm happy. That's just a side benefit. Since that time, I fasted occasionally here and there. A lot of times I'll skip two meals and just skip breakfast and lunch and have dinner with the family. So fast can be a lot of different things, but I don't think any of us are anywhere near where the Pharisees are at. The Pharisees are fasting twice a week. Mondays and Thursdays, they fast. And they're pretty proud about that. We fast. You don't. We're here. You're here. Maybe we should adopt that perspective. We should start fasting and look down on everybody who does it. Does that sound good? It's not where we're going. Why are the Pharisees making such a big deal about this? Fasting is a spiritual discipline, and the Pharisees are all about discipline, right? So fasting comes out of the Bible. There's fasting in the Bible. They're doing it. Jesus' followers are not. So this is a reason for that. It's an opportunity for them to attack. They found a weakness. Your people don't fast. We've got something on you. So they jump on that because this is something they're doing. And they're all about these disciplines and all about forcing other people into their code of discipline. So we got to ask, are Jesus' followers missing something? And if you read Jesus' answer, they're not, but it's not a simple answer. So what are we supposed to do? Am I supposed to fast? First read through, if the Pharisees fast, Jesus' followers don't, I probably want to not fast, right? I don't want to follow the Pharisees, but maybe there's more to it than that. So let's dig into it a little bit. I'll just throw this up on the screen. Fasting is the spiritual discipline of going without something physical, usually food, it could be other things, in order to focus on something spiritual, usually prayer and worship, something getting closer to God. So this practice is really common among the Jewish people. A lot of them did it. John the Baptist followers did it. Pharisees did it. Lots of people did it. But Jesus followers don't. Let's go back to the Old Testament. Fasting in the Old Testament. Moses. Remember Moses? Remember when he went up on the mountain to get the Ten Commandments? How long did he fast? 40 days. And it says he went without food and water. Now we all know that's physically impossible, right? So it must not be true. Or did God sustain him? God sustained him. God sustained him for 40 days without food and water. 40 days. Nurse, that's a long time. That's a long time. So that's one place we see it. He got the Ten Commandments then. Exodus 34. You can read it for yourself. There was a place in Judges, the book of Judges. Bad time for Israel. The whole nation of Israel fasted just before the Benjamite Civil War. One tribe, one of the 12, the tribe of Benjamin, had gone so far down. They had done something repugnant, something horrible. And so the entire 11 tribes went to war against this nation, almost decimated them. Scripture says the entire nation fasted before that time. That was a very serious thing. God wasn't happy about decimating almost an entire tribe. So they fasted before that. A lot of different reasons people fasted in the Old Testament. They might be mourning the loss of a loved one. They could be preparing for war, considering a major decision, or coming to God in repentance and brokenness. They would fast. So fasting demonstrates this dependence on God. I'm not dependent on physical stuff as much as I'm dependent on God. And it helped to focus their minds away from physical things. It recalibrated their hearts towards God. So fasting is a really good thing in the Old Testament. But it didn't end in the Old Testament. There's fasting in the New Testament. Jesus fasted. You remember that? Remember when he, very beginning of his ministry, he goes into the wilderness again for 40 days. And he fasts another 40 days. Now, you can fast from food for 40 days. A lot of people have done that. I'm not going to recommend that as a application for today. Starting today, next 40 days, no food. No, I'm not going to say that. But a lot that has happened. You need liquid. You need some kind of nutrients. But Jesus fasted 40 days in the wilderness when he's tempted by the devil. That whole time, not eating. So Jesus fasted. Jesus taught to fast. But his followers are not fasting. Let me just show you Matthew chapter 6. Jesus taught us to fast. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do. Don't make a big show of it. They disfigure their faces to show others they're fasting. You ever seen somebody do that, like putting on a show to get attention? Like, oh, and they're, you know, that's, no, this isn't about a public thing. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head, wash your face, do what you normally do, brush your teeth, so that it will not be obvious to others that you're fasting, but only to your Father who's unseen. And your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. So Jesus said, if you fast, you'll be rewarded. Don't make a show of it. But if you fast, your Father in heaven will reward you. Jesus did it. Jesus taught it. His followers are not doing it. What's going on? Why not? It's a pretty good question. That's what the Pharisees are asking. What's going on? So they take a pretty good swing here, I would say. But Jesus comes back with a pretty deep, profound answer. Verse 19. Jesus answered, "How can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he's with them? They cannot, so long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and on that day, they will fast." How can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? What is Jesus saying here? He never gives a direct answer. Does he say fasting is bad? He doesn't say fasting's bad. He answers the way he answers. But actually, he does come around and say his people will fast, just not now. So why not now? Why not now? And this is where he takes this to a whole nother level from where the Pharisees were going, what they were thinking. They're thinking about abstaining from food. And Jesus moves the conversation from what they were doing to who Jesus is. This is about who I am. And he brings this bridegroom idea to the forefront. And this is where the answer is found. Jesus is the bridegroom. So what does that make his followers? What does that make his followers? The bride. The bride. So think about it. In this picture he's given us, if the bride and the groom are together, this isn't the time to fast. This is a wedding celebration. This is incredible. This isn't the time to fast. It's time to feast. This is a good time. This is a time to celebrate. Think about it. The Messiah has come, right? Jesus has been anticipated for millennia. Now he's here. He's with his disciples. His ministry's begun. It's not done yet. He hasn't died. All that stuff is yet to happen. But he's here. This isn't a time to be somber and put off things like that. What, one of the most important components to a wedding celebration, a wedding reception, it's the food. What are you going to eat? What are you going to eat? Eating brings celebration. It's part of it. It would be inappropriate. It would be offensive to fast at a wedding party, especially if you're the bride. Oh, I'm not going to eat today. Or the wedding party. Can you imagine? Have you ever gone to a wedding and just not eaten? That'd be pretty offensive. You know how much money they paid per plate for that? At least tell us in advance you're not going to eat, right? This is time to party. It's not time to fast. This bridegroom analogy is really important for us to really get. It's the first time in the Gospel of Mark that it comes up, that he just introduced this. So Jesus just made a profound revelation about himself. I am the bridegroom. I'm the bridegroom. So what does that tell us about the kind of relationship God wants with us, the kind of relationship Jesus wants with us when we are the bride? This isn't just a do what I say. I made you. Follow my orders. Bridegroom, bride. This is so different from the way the Pharisees are thinking. So different. Pharisees, they're all about law, doing right. Jesus, all about relationship, being right. He went after them about that. Your hearts are so far from where they should be. I don't care what you're doing. Your offerings, your sacrifices are worthless to me. Look what's inside. Jesus is bringing something new. And the final thing Jesus says here in this little paragraph kind of gets at that. If you read this passage, I read it a few times. I'm like, what does this idea about a patch of unshrunk cloth and wine and wineskins, what does this have to do with what Jesus is talking about? And if you read through it and tried to follow the logic, it's a little bit awkward. Like, okay, why'd you just talk about that? This is the last encounter, the last swing in this section. But it really, when you understand it, this is a major blow to the Pharisees. This is a serious blow to the Pharisees. It's huge when you understand it. Let me just look at it again here. 21 and 22. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. No one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins. So, first, let's understand what these pictures are, because most of us are not really sewing patches on anything right now. But when they did, they had to treat the patch first. Because if you bought anything that's kind of cheap and you wash it and dry it, what happens? Yeah, you've got a muscle shirt already. Congratulations. So that would happen back then, but it was even worse because we have a lot of technology now and whatnot. So they knew you've got to treat the patch first before you put it on the old jeans so that they don't ruin the jeans when you put the patch on, because you start washing it and put it out in the sun to dry. They didn't have dryers. That would ruin it. So we got that picture. I think that makes sense. And then he brings this wine and wineskins thing. They would keep their wine in a skin. I didn't do the research to find out what kind of skin. If it was goat skin or who knows. But they would put them in these skins. It was like a bag. Those water bottles you get, that's a bag. It's not even a, it's kind of like that. So they put it in a wine skin, and the fermentation process made it expand some. So that's probably part of why they did it. It expanded. And so if you did that more than one time, the skin couldn't hack it. So if you expand wine in a skin, you only do it once. You can't do it again. You put new wine into that old wineskin, pop. Balloon too big, kablooey. So they know you can't do that. So why does he bring these two pictures into this conversation? What's the message? He doesn't actually explain it. Some of his parables, he'll talk about it later. Here's what I meant. He doesn't do that this time. So we have to figure out on our own, looking at the context, what's going on, and figure it out. So I'm not going to say, thus saith the Lord on this. I'm going to tell you, this is what I understand he meant. So you can argue with me about it, and I'm okay with that. But here's what I'm seeing. This analogy of the cloth and wine is a subtle statement that the Pharisees and Jesus are completely incompatible. Jesus is the new wine. They are the old wineskins. Their way of thinking, their way of doing things, their philosophy towards life, it's all just completely incompatible. He's been going through the ring a few times. This is the third confrontation. There's two more to come. And he's saying this kind of subtle message. We are not compatible. We need a new wineskin in order for this new wine to fit. And so the way that you're thinking, the way you've been functioning, the way you guys have figured out religion is just off. You can't just add Jesus to this. You can't just add Jesus to your way of doing things. You need a new you. Incompatible. So where we're going with this is that we can't just hang on to our old religious system and the way we do things and just add Jesus. We have to start over. We have to start over. Jesus has to make a new us. And so the reality is, if Jesus is going to fit in me, I need a new me. But we don't have to be kind of terrified about that, because God has promised, he's absolutely committed to helping us become a new us. He's doing that process. He's making us into a new skin to hold Jesus, because the old ways are legalistic kind of ways of thinking, check box, I do this, do this, do that. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit. It doesn't hold Jesus. So we need a new us. So you look at these three little sections, verses 18 to 22. First is the attack. You guys are spiritually inferior. You don't fast. Jesus replies in the second section, of course they don't. Now is not the time. This is party time, guys, and you're missing the party. And then the third section, Jesus declares that the way of the Pharisees and the way of Jesus are absolutely incompatible. Religious legalism and grace-based relationship do not blend. Doesn't work. So we have to keep that stuff out. We have to fight against it. And that's what Jesus is doing with the Pharisees. Does that make sense? Do you have any questions before we move into, okay, what are we supposed to do with this? Am I supposed to fast or aren't I? Any questions? Okay, hopefully that's making sense. What does this have to do with us? The question that will answer that question, whether we should fast or not fast, any of that, the question is, what time is it for us? You have to look at verse 20. It says, the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and on that day they will fast. The time will come when the bridegroom is taken from them. On that day they will fast. So what time is it for us? For them, Jesus was there. It's time to celebrate. It's time to have a party. What time is it now? This is the engagement time, right? This is the engagement period. We are still the bride, but Jesus isn't, I don't get to do an interview with Jesus. He's not right here. I don't get to hug him. He's been taken from us. So this could be the time to fast. The engagement time is not exactly a sad time, is it? You remember when you were engaged, those of you who are married? You remember that? It's kind of fun, right? A little bit scary, like, wow, he finally asked me to marry him. Or, I can't believe it, she actually said yes. Or, oh my goodness, I'm getting married. Those of you who are not there yet, you kind of maybe daydream about that. What's that going to be like? Those are good daydreams, right? Those are good daydreams. This is an exciting time. This isn't like somber time, like woe is me. Engagement is exciting. Ann and I got engaged January 15th, 1999. January. at Ricketts Glen State Park right after a snowstorm. It was great. It was really, really great. I wanted it to be a surprise, but because we're going in a snowstorm, she knew something is probably up because we didn't reschedule for the snowstorm. No, we're doing this. We're going to Ricketts Glen today. She told me this later. Yeah, I knew something was going on. So we drive all the way to Ricketts Glen from Clark Summit. It was like, I don't know, an hour and a half in a snowstorm. And we made it. So the surprise wasn't perfect, but the scene was. It was amazing. Like 6 inches, fresh snow. We're the only ones in the park. We're the only ones, except for the guy who stopped and asked if we had ice climbing gear. But he left. And we were making clean tracks on this trail. We hardly knew where the trail was. Fresh tracks, hiking in, hiked to the top of the first waterfall, and we're just sitting there. And the water has turned to ice. I mean, there's ice sculptures of the waterfall. And that's where I took a knee and asked her, will you spend the rest of your life with me? And she said, yes. And I'm very thankful that she said, yes. That was 15 years and 4 kids ago. And we're both still happy we made that decision, right? She nodded even before I asked her to. See that? Verification. We are both happy about that. We had a 7-month engagement. 7 months. And about half of that engagement, we were separated by about 8 hours of driving. She's in Ohio, I'm in Pennsylvania, she's getting ready for the wedding, we're getting married at her home church in Cedarville, and I'm back in Pennsylvania working at Cornerstone and at Friendly's full-time, and so that we were separated for a long time. It wasn't fun to be apart that summer, but we knew it wasn't going to last long, and we had the rest of our lives together. We were counting down the days, looking forward to that, and so it wasn't a huge deal. The engagement period, that's the time period we're in with Jesus right now. Do you look at life that way? That's the time. If you are part of the bride of Christ, that's where we are right now. We're engaged. The wedding's coming. So that's what time it is. What are we supposed to do during this time? Well, I guess we're supposed to get ready for a wedding, right? We get ready for a wedding. And it's not a typical wedding, so we're not booking places to stay. I think Jesus has that covered. He's going to take us to a pretty cool spot. So we don't have to make flowers or order flowers. Sorry, Monica. You're really good at that. But we're supposed to be getting ready for a wedding. So you might want to think about, what in the world would that look like? I'm getting ready to marry the King of creation. Part of that is that the bride isn't complete yet, right? There are more to be added to the bride. Part of that is there are parts of the bride that are still kind of ugly. Like, I want to make myself beautiful. It's kind of a weird thing for a guy to say. But this is a way that we guys have to adjust a little bit. Okay, I'm a bride. All right, I can still have a deep voice and be a beautiful bride. So there are parts of us that are not yet beautiful yet. So part of that is making ourselves beautiful, internal things like fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. Did I mention patience? Self-control. All of those things are making ourselves more beautiful. And the cool thing is Jesus is helping us with that. And he promised, I'm going to do that in you. I'm going to finish this process that I began in you. You are going to be a beautiful bride. So if you're part of the bride of Christ, you can't fail in this. You might wait until the very end and miss out on some things. But this is where we are. The bride's not complete yet, and we're not completely beautiful yet. So those are some things we get to do to get ready for the wedding. Does that make sense? There might be some other things to do too. But that's what we're about. Keep on building that relationship with Jesus. Keep on building that so we just become more and more close with him as an engaged couple would do, and do those things he's asked us to do to get ready. So the question of the day is, should we fast? Should we fast now? This is the engagement time. Should I fast? The answer is maybe. Maybe. Not yes, not no. But I would say sure if it's going to help you stay close to God. if it's going to help you get closer to God. This isn't a Pharisee kind of thing saying, yeah, Mondays and Thursdays, here we go, everybody. We're going to save on the grocery bill. This is going to be great. Maybe. It's up to you if it's going to help. And fasting, if you think about it just for a second, fasting doesn't have to be a miserable time. Now, I've changed in that. I used to think, like, there's nothing good about fasting. Stopping eating. But there are actually things that are better in this life than food. This is like a new thing for me. There are things in this life that are better than food. More precious. And I haven't always known that. So I'm getting to the point where I can joyfully set aside food for something better. Now, how much time do you guys spend on the phone? Spend a decent amount of time on the phone. How many of you eat while you're on the phone? Admit it. Come on. You eat while you're on the phone. Just a little pet peeve of mine. I don't like to hear you chewing when we're on the phone. Okay? Think about your relationship with God. Some parts of it's like, I'm going to put that aside for a minute while I talk on the phone. I'm going to stop eating my pretzels just for a minute, because I know you can hear me chewing, and it's kind of rude to do that while we're talking. I watched a movie. I don't know if you've seen what's it called? The Identical. Anybody see The Identical? I guess it's about, like, what if Elvis's twin brother survived? Anyway, it's a decent movie. It's a decent movie. I'm not going to say you have to go watch it. But just a part of that movie, these young guys go out on a date with these two girls. And who's seen it? Who am I talking to? Nobody's? Come on. All right. Anyway, you don't have to have seen it to understand this. These two guys are out on a date. They're kind of at a party kind of situation. There's music and all that. They're dancing. And the main character, he's dancing with his date, and it's great. His friend that he came with was just lost. This guy was so hooked on substances that, and they were showing, they were making a point with this, but he was so hooked on substances that he's dancing with this girl with a beer and a cigarette in his hand. He's holding that. Have you ever seen anybody dance like that? Like, he's just like, he's hooked. He's hooked to this. Like, yeah, I'm sort of dancing with you. Like, that's not how you dance, okay? Just lesson number one of dancing. Like, don't bring your addictions with you, right? I guess I won't ask. I was going to ask Ann to come up so you could see this and watch me trying to dance with Ann while eating pretzels. It's annoying. So I'm not even going to put her through that. But you think about, I am the bride of Christ and I'm trying to get closer to him. Sometimes we set aside those physical things that we love so that we can focus. So you think about your prayer life. Does anybody have an ADD prayer life? You start praying and all of a sudden you're, where was I? Does anybody else have an ADD prayer life? Most of us do to some degree. Some of you guys are really great and you're zoned in. But like when you're dancing, the right way to dance is you're looking into their eyes and you're focused and you're with them. So sometimes it's good to just put aside something to help us focus. Next time you go out dancing, try holding a soda and a few pretzels and eat while you dance. Just see how awkward that might be. So it's not, the point is that we should never eat when you pray. I knew a college student that every morning at breakfast, he would have breakfast with Jesus. And he had a little stand for his Bible, so it was just convenient. He turned the pages, he's eating his cereal, and he spent time with Jesus. That's great. I have no problem with that. That's cool. That's really cool. But there just might be some time to help us focus, to set aside things that we find precious, to just help us to find Jesus more precious. Because I think most of us need some help with our ADD prayer life. So fasting is not something we have to do, but it might be something we want to do if you want to get closer to to Jesus. Just, we have to make sure we keep this thing rooted in grace, not legalism. We're not going to put out this, there's a, okay, new thing, Cornerstone people, we fast. We fast. So, how's your fast? Did you fast this week, Sherry? Yeah? Sherry? We're not going there. This has to be rooted in grace. This is about my desire to get closer to Christ. So, I don't have to fast. You can't make me, and I can't make you. This is not legalism 101. But if you want to, it could be a really good thing. Now, fasting is abstaining from food, so I just have to add, if you have a medical condition, if you're on medication, you might want to talk to somebody, talk to your doctor to make sure that it's okay. Sometimes, some cases, some people are in a situation where this would be harmful to you to fast. So just make sure you're clear. Make sure you're clear on that. And then maybe you want to go forward with that. But for most of us, you miss 2 or 3 meals, it's not going to hurt. Probably. We do have a nurse on premises. Maybe she has some understanding. You have any insight about fasting? She doesn't want to put her neck out online. Okay, don't talk. Don't talk to her. That's okay. This is a spiritual thing. I think there are probably some benefits to going without food physically, but I'm not sure about that. So this isn't about physical stuff. This is more about spiritual stuff. But I would say, if you're going to go any longer than 24 hours, you probably want to talk to a doctor. Do your research. Make sure that you're okay. We're not talking about 40-day fast here. But who knows? God might call you to something more extreme than anything I've ever done. 24 hours is my max. That's all I've ever done. So just think about it. This is probably a new idea for a lot of you. Just consider. Sometimes we're going to do this to help us focus, to help us zero in. Sometimes it's because there's something going on in our lives that we need to get serious about, because we just need God's heart about this, something really hard. We might be going through something in our lives that would make us, you know what, I'm putting aside this stuff because I just need to understand the heart of God, and that will help us to do that. So think about it. Do you have a reason that it might be a good idea for you to fast? Is there something in your life, you know what, I need to do this. I need to do this because something is really hard that I'm going through. Something I just need God's wisdom. Or maybe you're facing a major decision. Sometimes it's good to fast and pray before a major decision. You just get close to God and get some of his wisdom about it. You might know that your relationship with God isn't exactly where you want it to be. So this could help get you back in a healthier place. You might even fast for a friend. Might be a friend of yours is going through something really hard, and as a way to stay close to them and to get close to God, you're going to fast and pray for them. You know somebody who could use your support in that kind of a way. I was studying this passage this week, and that's kind of the application that rose for me, that I have a friend who's going through some heavy stuff right now, and so I'm going to fast for that person. And so I told them for the next 4 weeks on Tuesdays, I'm going to skip 2 meals. It's breakfast and lunch and dinner. I'm going to skip 2 meals. And during that time, I'm going to pray. And every time I feel hungry, I'm going to pray for them. That's the other part of the fast. When you feel hungry, it's a reminder. Like, yeah, I love that stuff, but I love you more. And it can be a trigger to remind you, I'm here to pray. This is a time to go to the Lord. So that's my application. Every Tuesday, that's what I'm going to be doing. Just praying for my friend. And I have no doubt from doing this before that taking that time to do that is going to expand my love for my friend, and it's going to deepen my relationship with God. And so there's nothing legalistic about it. I'm doing it out of love. That needs to be the motivation. Otherwise, don't do it. So do you have a reason to fast? Think about your own life, your own struggles, your own pressures, all that stuff. Or just your desire to be closer to God. You feel distant, feel far away, feel like a crackly long-distance call. Maybe taking some time to put away things you love can help. So I encourage you to act on it. Think about it. Don't let this just be, that's interesting. Never done that before. I don't plan to. Think about it. And do whatever homework you need to do. Talk to your doctor. Just don't let it slip away. I want to give you some hope. because I asked you to think about, is there a reason you have to fast? And that might remind you of something heavy. So I want to give you some hope right now, because life is hard sometimes. And because life is hard, it could be a reason to fast and pray, because life beats us up, right? You ever feel beat up by life? Anybody? Or just me? You feel beat up by life. And so we feel this pressure. Life gets hard. Thinking back to our engagement, that period of separation was not easy. It was not easy for us to be apart for 8 hours. We didn't see each other for the whole summer, pretty much, until our wedding. And Anne's taking a class, and she's taking a class online and doing pretty much everything to get ready for the wedding. I'm not there, so I can't really help very much. So she's got a lot of pressure there. Never done this before. This is a lot to do. I'm back in Pennsylvania. I'm working. I'm doing all my stuff, and it wasn't fun to be apart. I'm learning all this stuff about, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to provide for a family, and Anne's going to be leaning on me to be the husband and whatever that means. And so it was kind of a pressure time for us, kind of stressful. And so we talked to each other pretty often on the phone and emails, and you know, we stayed connected that way. And we're counting down the days. But as I thought back to that summer, that difficult summer to be apart, it kind of stretched my memory to even remember that summer. There were a ton. I don't even remember most of it. I think I was living with the Hardenbrooks that summer. I was in Clark Summit, living with the Hardenbrooks, the original founding pastor here, and working at Friendly. What's that? Kutztown. Did I say Clark Summit? I was living here in Kutztown. But there's so many details just forgotten. So here's the hope. All the stress that you're feeling right now, you're in it right now. The hard stuff that's just overwhelming sometimes feels like I can't even make it. There's going to come a day when you can hardly even remember that. And you look at, okay, your summer, you guys are engaged in summer class and planning for a wedding. Whoop-de-doo. Like, that's nothing. And I'll grant you that. Compared to some of the stresses that you guys have, it's nothing. But the way that you look at our stress is the way God looks at your stress. You're going to forget about it. The wedding day is coming. We're in the engagement period right now. There's some hard things we got to do, but the wedding day is coming. It's real. We're not just some imaginary bride of Christ, and when we die, everything goes kaput and nothing. There's something after we pass through that. It's going to be amazing. Amazing. There's a scripture that reminded me that just this idea, you know, that our stresses are nothing, you know, compared to yours, and yours are nothing compared to what God sees. 2 Corinthians 4, therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. We have a hope that we don't have to lose heart. The stress that we face is going to be taken care of. And in God's ginormous creator perspective, he's got it. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's hard to see it that way when we're in the middle of it. But someday you won't even be able to remember it. So is your relationship with Jesus like a fiancé kind of relationship? That's what he wants with us, and that's where we want to be with him. So let's get obsessed with Jesus. The way that you were when you were engaged is constantly thinking, I wonder what she's doing right now. I wonder what he's doing right now. I wonder what they're thinking about. I wonder if they're writing to me. I wonder what would Jesus be doing right now? And if he were here, would he want me to buy this? Is this what he want me to do? And just think, just obsessed with him. Jesus is here. Like, what does he want me to be doing? And what would he say about that? There's a sign out at Kutztown Bible Fellowship. I don't know if you noticed it this week. The sign says, Jesus on every page. Jesus on every page. That's what he's looking for with us. It's not about keeping some strict set of rules. It's not about starving yourself to keep God happy. Nothing like that. I love him. I want to be close to him. That's what he wants with us. Lord, I thank you that you've given us this picture. You took the Pharisees from where they're coming from and just flipped it all around and showed us something really beautiful, what you desire with us. God, I'm convinced that there are certainly people here who do not have that kind of relationship with you. You didn't come to the cross and die so that you'd have a whole bunch of little slaves. You bought your bride. You redeemed your bride from death. You gave us life. So God, just make us ready for you. Make our skins ready to receive this new thing that Jesus brings. Thank you for the beauty of what you want with us. I pray that you will change our wants from being so attached to food and other things of this world that our attachment to you grows stronger day by day. That one day when that reality comes, when that wedding party comes, we'll be ready and we'll just be so pumped for that. I know we're going to be blown away. It's going to be beyond anything we can fathom. And just help us to live in that reality now and not just wait until then to be completely blown away. Thank you that you love us deeply. And this is real. In Jesus' name, amen.